gonna write you, Joe. I want you to write back. I don't know if you ever knew it or you just forgot. The world's a beautiful place.
No, it's not.
Japanese have pretty much busted every code we've thrown at them. The Corps developed a new code based on the Navajo language. You're to pair with a code talker. Your job is to keep him alive so he can do his job.
I'm Ben Yazi. It takes me 2.5 minutes to do what used to take an hour.
Orders finally came through. We ship out tomorrow morning.
You see any combat, Yazi?
Looking forward to getting into some.
How are you now?
Coordinates!
You done good today, Ben.
You never called me that before.
Your mission is to protect the code at all costs. You understand me?
Yes, sir. I do.
Let's go!
Think you could do it, Joe? Could you do it if you had to?
If you got caught, the code would be useless.
You just do what you're supposed to do.
He's my responsibility!
I can't let him take it.
When this is over, you should come out to Navajo country. You can meet my son. And you can meet the guy who watched over Daddy.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. How are you today, Mike?
I'm swell.
That's good. Interesting choice, but I like it.
I'm swell. Not so much because I just watched this movie, because
not so much.
Otherwise, though, doing fine. You know, doing fine. So we watched this movie that we'll talk about right now. In the year 2002, Nicolas Cage reunited with director John Woo, who he had worked with once before on Face Off. And Mike, I'm a big fan of John Woo, and I think you enjoy the works of John Woo as well, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen a whole lot of his films, but just through cultural osmosis and everything.
Yeah. So John Woo has, at this point, had been making American action movies for almost 10 years, and he was looking for something a little bit different, and he was immediately drawn to this story that was centered on the growing friendship between American Marines and the Navajo-American Code Talkers during World War II, and that movie would come to be known as Wind Talkers. Now, Nicolas Cage was John Woo's first choice to play the lead character, and Cage was the first actor to sign onto the project, and this is from the IMDb's trivia page, so I can't totally verify that this is true or not, but apparently, Nicolas Cage actually learned how to speak Navajo fluently for this part, despite the fact that his character never speaks Navajo in the movie.
That seems like a stretch. Although, it is Nicolas Cage.
So we can never really be sure. Apparently, Nicolas Cage claims that it was to better understand the script, and John Woo later said that Cage had misunderstood which character he was cast as.
Oh my god.
And I really hope John Woo's the one that's right about that one, because that would be incredible.
Yeah.
If Nicolas Cage thought he was cast as the American Indian. I think
that would be the best
off thing
ever. He probably, if anyone could, it'd be Nicolas Cage.
Now, John Woo's career in American cinema is best described as spottier than his stuff in China. You know, he fought with the studios at every turn, at almost every movie that he made. And in almost every case, even if the movie turned out good, it usually wasn't exactly what John Woo had envisioned. The one exception to this happens to be Face Off, in which John Woo had total creative control. And you can totally tell that when you're watching the movie.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It is the wooiest of the woos. And for this movie, he was coming right off of directing Mission Impossible 2, which got a pretty mixed response at the time and is today generally considered the weakest of the Mission Impossible movies. He took a chance with Windtalkers on making something that was based in real life that told a story that isn't often discussed, and the gamble didn't really work out. Windtalkers got mostly negative reviews, and it was a box office bomb. On a budget of $115 million, this movie made about $77 million, so not so good there. The big criticism that was lobbied towards this movie, and this one ran through my head as I was watching it too, before I had even looked up any of the criticism for this movie, is that the Navajo characters aren't really the focus of this movie, even though it's ostensibly their story, and their story is the one that is interesting to watch. Like when it's focused on those characters, I'm like, okay, I can. This is interesting. This is something I haven't seen before. But instead, this movie focuses on Nicolas Cage's Sergeant Joe Enders for the most part, and his relationship to the Navajo. And by the end, it kind of just feels like another white savior narrative that we've seen in countless movies at this point.
Yeah, I would agree. That's pretty much the whole... Yeah, you got it. It doesn't add, I realize, as I started talking.
Yeah, fair enough. The movie also made a careerafter.military.com's list of the 10 most inaccurate military movies ever made, coming in at number 4, which is just behind Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor. The Green Berets with John Wayne, and of course, The Patriot.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but despite all that, John Woo did assemble a pretty great cast for this thing. In addition to Nicolas Cage as Sergeant Joe Enders, you've got Adam Beach as a Private Ben Yazzi. And Mike, I don't know if you know this, but Ben Yazzi was an inside job.
Mike, don't make me turn this podcast around. I'll pull over, I swear to God.
I was way too proud of that joke. Adam Beach is an actor who you've probably seen in every movie that's ever depicted a Native American person ever. He's usually involved. But you may also remember him as a Slipknot from Suicide Squad, a character that was killed off almost as soon as he was introduced in the movie.
Yep, the best.
All he did was he said, "My name is Slipknot. I can climb anything," and then he dies before you even see him climb anything.
Yep. It's insane.
Yeah, so Adam Beach is kind of a co-lead of this movie, but then otherwise you've got Peter Stormare, who also appeared in 8mm with Nicolas Cage, so that's a pretty neat reunion there. And he plays Cage's commanding officer, Richard Helmstead. Noah Emmerich, best known these days as a cast member of The Americans, but also Jim Carrey's best friend in The Truman Show, plays Chick Clusters, the racist soldier who comes around in the end. Mark Ruffalo is in this movie, Mike, as Milo Pappas, and Christian Slater is it's my Christian Slater voice, plays Ox Henderson. Roger Willie plays the other Navajo code talker, Charlie Whitehorse, and he was actually the movie's dialect coach who was brought on board to help the actors with their Navajo, but his screen tests were so good that they just cast him in the role.
Really? That's interesting.
That's like that's a very similar story to how Harrison Ford got cast as Han Solo. He was just supposed to test with other actors, and they ended up just casting him. This guy didn't have the career that Harrison Ford does, but still, pretty neat.
Yeah.
And then you've got Brian Van Holt from Cougar Town as Andrew Harriman, the guy with the flamethrower. Martin Henderson from The Ring and Grey's Anatomy as Thomas Nelly. Frances O'Connor plays Rita, the one female character in the movie. She was the mom of the family being haunted in The Conjuring 2.
Yep.
I'm pulling out all the deep cuts this time around.
Yeah.
And finally, for one scene, Jason Isaacs appears in this movie, Lucius Malfoy from the Harry Potter films, as Major Mellitz, giving Cage his assignment to watch after the Navajo code talker. Now, Windtalkers was directed by John Woo 2 years after Mission Impossible 2 and 1 year before what would be his final American film, Paycheck, with Ben Affleck and Uma Thurman.
Wow. I forgot about that movie.
I actually had never heard of that movie. I don't know that one. Have you seen it?
I have seen it, but I literally don't remember anything about it. I just know that I have seen it.
You and everyone else, probably.
Probably, yeah.
He has since returned to his Hong Kong filmmaking roots and has received some acclaim for his film since, most recently directing the two-part movie The Crossing and The Crossing 2 in 2014 and 2015. And Windtalkers also features a score from composer James Horner, and it was written by the writing team of Joe Battier and John Rice, who also worked on films such as Blown Away and Chasers. The IMDb plot synopsis for Windtalkers reads, "Two U.S. Marines in World War II are assigned to protect Navajo Marines who use their native language as an unbreakable radio cipher." So, Mike, with all that out of the way, what were your thoughts on Windtalkers?
Oh man! So Windtalker is in principle sounds like it could be a really interesting, cool idea, right? About these Native Americans that like they use their like the synopsis said their native language as a code that can couldn't be broken. But like we talked about, it just becomes about like a bunch of white guys like sitting, and it falls into a lot of war movie traps, I think, where we are given this large squad or large-ish eight people or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And many of them we don't know anything about until the scene before they die. We're like, we just learned a fact about you. You're about to die. Yeah. And that happens a couple times. So it's for a war movie, it's surprisingly boring, I think. I know we had talked about it before that's like what war is, right? It's a lot of sitting around until there's not. Until there's battles or something.
Yeah.
But even the moments that are the quiet before the storm, there's not much happening. It's just like the dialogue isn't very interesting. I don't think the characters are that engaging. So I didn't feel super connected to any of them. Even though, you're able to recognize there's the facts that we learned before you die thing. So I guess those are my initial thoughts on just the overall film for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, I was not a big fan either of Windtalkers, yeah. Which is a shame because John Woo World War II movie or a World War Woo movie is that is a phrase that should be like right in my wheelhouse. Like I should be about that. And the movie's biggest problem, like we mentioned before, is that its focus is on Nicolas Cage. When it should be on Adam Beach. Adam Beach should be the main character of this movie.
Absolutely.
And, Cage's character is going through things that we've seen in countless other movies. You know, we've kind of even seen Cage do these things in other movies before, like dealing with PTSD in Birdie, for example. That's kind of the thing that he does in that movie that he does here. Navajo code talkers are not people who often get movies made about them. I struggle with – I think this is the only one.
Yeah,
pretty much. And so this right there is your chance to tell a more unique story in your World War II movie. The movie's ratio is probably like 70% Cage, 30% Beach, and it should definitely be the other way around.
Absolutely, yeah.
Not even just for representation purposes, but also because that story is a more interesting one than to see like this umpteenth like PTSD white soldier story. Like the same – like we've seen all that stuff before in so many other war movies.
Particularly every other war movie.
Exactly. And you have this like one unique angle and they don't play it up. And I don't understand the thinking behind that other than maybe like they thought Nicolas Cage was a more marketable name, which he probably is a more marketable name, but you could have just like thrown his name on the poster and had Adam Beach be the star of the movie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's this weird disjointed disconnect. I don't know how to phrase it exactly, where the movie is trying to portray that damaged PTSD, the horrors and side effects of war on the human psyche.
Yeah.
But also mixing in John Woo style action scenes.
Yeah.
That does not work together at all.
That's the thing. I feel like I'm going to take a lot of flack for this. I think the action in this movie is great. I'm a big fan. Like John Woo can shoot action like nobody's business, And I was looking at, later on we'll do our Netflix reviews, and I was looking at some of the Netflix reviews. So many of them are like, the action is like way too over the top and silly. And I'm like, but that's what makes it awesome.
I'm on board for that. But just for the tone of what the downtime scenes are mixed, juxtaposed with the silly, weird, single shot, single take, camera tilty, like action silliness of the other battle of the battle scenes. If it just doesn't work for me,
I think for me, part of what it was is that I was not into the stuff outside the action scenes at all.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, that's totally fair.
And so whenever the action scenes coming around and like people who had like samurai swords and there was like knives getting thrown and like there was explosions left and right and there was slow mo, I was like, I'm in. This is cool. So I actually think I liked the movie a little bit more than I might have because I thought the action was just so much fun. And the action takes up a good chunk of the movie. I was at least having fun for a good portion of it. He shoots these like military battles, which are usually shot very like, I think in most movies, they're shot very like down and gritty, like realistic, like, these trying to be as realistic as possible. And I think there's a reason why this ended up on the list of most inaccurate military movies of all time is because I don't think John Woo can shoot anything that's not like his usual big action set pieces.
So I'm surprised there wasn't a Dove artillery.
just people firing doves at at people. Yeah. So I don't know if he was necessarily going for realistic. Maybe he even was going for realistic, and that's just not something he's capable of. But they are a lot of fun, I think, and there's a ton of creativity on display there. In the action scenes with, like, plenty of John Woo's signature style. Like I mentioned, the slow motion. There's more explosions in this war movie than I feel like I've seen in any other war movie in recent memory.
For real. It's pretty outstanding.
There's even the Mexican standoff at one point.
In true John Woo fashion, yeah, there is, in the middle of a battle.
The only thing, like, you know, there's, like, cages, like... You know, we'll have like a handgun and it's like shooting from like behind his back and stuff like that. And I'm like, there's no way a soldier would ever do that. But it's awesome.
It's ridiculous.
But like anything that's not an action scene, the movie kind of falls flat. The characters are all like pretty stock military movie types. You know, there's one guy who's a bit of a jerk and there's one guy who's kind of a racist. And like one guy has a wife to get back to, so he has to die. And
one guy's Italian from New York. The best.
I do want to mention my one bit of background going into this movie. I had not seen Windtalkers, but I once went on a bus trip to the Grand Canyon that stopped at a few...
That's the whole story.
Yeah, that's where it stops. The bus trip stopped at a few different sites, and one of them was Monument Valley, which I was really excited about because Monument Valley is where a ton of like great Westerns were filmed, a lot of John Ford Westerns and stuff like that. And it appears in this movie as well. It's where the Navajo live at the beginning of this movie. It's Monument Valley. And on the way back, we stopped at a rest stop that was located in a Navajo reservation. And inside that rest stop was a wall, a literal gigantic wall that was just filled from top to bottom with DVDs of Windtalkers.
Really? Oh, my God.
And I remember thinking that was so odd, you know, and I hadn't seen the movie and I kind of knew what it was about. But I was like, wow. Like so when I say like this is probably the only war movie that has to do with Navajo code talkers, like. It probably literally is, because otherwise there would be at least another DVD on that wall.
Yeah, it's got to, which makes this the poor quality of this movie so hurt so much more, right? Because it's a story that deserves a really good movie, and it doesn't have it in Windtalkers.
Yeah, that's a fascinating idea, like the code talker, like Navajo code talkers, like people who, you know, that's a different kind of job. Than you usually hear about in these World War II movies or even in like history books. Like I don't think I had ever like learned about that in school or anything. Like that's just like a cool, unique angle for the story that the movie doesn't really acknowledge all that much. Like it's named after it and it doesn't acknowledge it.
It becomes about the pain of the white man who has to babysit the code talker. Instead of about the code talker.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the white man, what did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie, Mike?
I think that comparing it to Face Off makes a lot of sense. It's a similar performance, I think. I think Face Off is much more unhinged and insane because he's playing a literal crazy terrorist. But I think that Windtalkers at moments is the precursor. It's a rare glimpse into the future of Nicolas Cage's roles, I think.
I don't know about that, man. I mean, I don't see any similarity between this and Face Off. Face Off to me is like, you know, that is unhinged, crazy Cage. And for at least for the first like 20 minutes of Face Off, when he is the terrorist, and then he switches faces and he's the good guy, but he's still like an engaging action hero. I thought Cage was like fine in this movie, but he just seemed kind of like checked out of the movie. Like,
okay.
It didn't seem like he was like engaged in the story that he was a part of. Like almost as if even he knew that he probably shouldn't be the focus of the movie. You know?
Yeah. I think there's at least one or two scenes that I can point to, specifically the fake prisoner scene Yazzie switch into the Japanese uniform.
Right. I will say, I actually really like that scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool scene. It's really crazy. It's insane. But there's the moment where he tells Cage, you know, he's pretending to be the prisoner, and he tells him to knock him down. And he falls, and Cage drops to his knees and starts, like, yelling in Japanese and, like, begging for his life in Japanese. And it just looked like something that would happen in, like, Ghost Rider or some shit. I don't know. He just went off the hinge there. It went crazy.
I don't know. To me, like, I could see that. But to me, he kind of fell flat in this role, partially because I just don't think the character is that much that interesting or given that much to do, really. Yeah. Out of all the Cage war movies or, like, war-adjacent movies that we've discussed so far, because he's been in a surprising number of, like, war-adjacent movies, I think this is probably his weakest performance out of all those war movies. I would say, I was thinking about between this and Captain Corelli's Mandolin. I would say at least he seems engaged in Captain Corelli's Mandolin, you know?
Right. Like he's actually doing a thing.
Despite the accent. Like he was really trying with that accent, you know?
Right. And you gotta give him credit for that.
I give him credit for that. So this seems like his weakest of those performances. How do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play so far, Mike?
We're approaching the precipice, I think, as far as I'm concerned with Nicolas Cage's career.
You think it's all downhill after this?
I think we're getting close. I can't remember like 2003, 2005-ish in there, and we're a couple years before that.
I mean, I think there's still a lot of good stuff on the horizon, but that's me.
Sure. I think that's where I'm coming from with the, I think this is a few scenes we see a rare glimpse of him just being crazy. But I think it is interesting that you pointed out that there's been so many war themes or war adjacent, as you put them, movies. Yes.
I have a list of them here. He starred in several movies at this point where he plays a soldier or someone who's about to be a soldier, like these war adjacent movies. There's Racing with the Moon. There was Birdie. There was Tempo Lucidere, Firebirds,
right.
Captain Corelli's Mandolin, and you know, maybe if you want to count it, Best of Times.
I was going to say, don't forget that monologue in Best of Times.
But I think this is the only one so far that I would actually call a war movie. It's the only one that actually depicts soldiers in combat, which does occur towards the end of Captain Corelli's Mandolin, but that's not really the focus of that movie. That's more of a sweeping romance.
Right.
Whereas this is all about these soldiers in this one battle throughout the movie, and it's a lot of combat going on in this movie. So I would say this is an actual war movie, whereas all of those are, like, war adjacent, almost. Like, they're about war in ways, but, like, it's very rare that you had seen Nicolas Cage, like, actually in a combat situation before.
Right.
And also, Cage forming an unlikely bond and gaining an understanding of a man of a different race than he is also the plot of Amos and Andrew.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
So there's that. And of course, the pairing of Cage and John Woo is a face-off reunion as well, so it kind of fits into that as well. Now, Mike, what were the are there any moments or scenes in this movie that stood out to you about Windtalkers?
Well, I did mention the fake prisoner scene, yes. But I do think that final battle scene is another, I think, one of the unhinged moments for me in my mind.
Do you mean the scene where he's dying?
Yeah, like the whole lead up to that, to rescue the radio, to steal the radio or whatever they have to do there.
I thought his death scene was hilarious. Almost because it looked like it was almost like shot for shot, line for line, the exact same fake death scene from the beginning of Tropic Thunder.
Holy shit. Yeah, you're right.
Right? It was like,
yeah.
It felt like Cage was doing the same kind of like Ben Stiller, like trying to cry but not being able to, and like, and like, I love Cage. I love him so much, but like, I just don't think he was like pulling it off in that scene.
Yeah,
you know. So that was pretty ridiculous. But yeah, I did want to say the scene with the Japanese uniform where Adam Beach was putting that on and pretending to take Cage hostage. I thought that was a really cool idea and something that I hadn't like seen before in something like this. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely, it would fall into the least accurate war movie categories.
Quite possible. I do want to say that Charlie Whitehorse, the other Navajo guy, total MVP of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He's a total fucking badass. More competent than any other character in the movie. He aced all of his training. And he has some awesome knife moves towards the end that are just a blast to watch. See, there's a scene where he rescues Noah Emmerich by, like, throwing a knife and, like, narrowly missing Noah Emmerich and hitting the guy behind him.
Yeah. I did really think that – I thought that that like town battle scene that happens during was really intense.
Yeah.
But like we said, we've kind of mentioned that during the action scenes, this is a pretty solid, okay movie.
Yeah.
And then everything in between, not so much.
Yeah. I just think the action is so much fun to watch. There's so much crazy shit happening. Christian Slater gets decapitated in one scene.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa. And like, even just the beginning of the movie, there's like the opening battle scene. And there's just so much like chaos of war stuff happening. Like, there's a very early on in the first battle scene, a dude gets his hand chopped off by the samurai, and it like audibly made me go like, oh shit, like
that was the moment that made me write down that John Woo stylized action doesn't fit with horrors of war movie.
Yeah, I don't think it fits necessarily, but I really enjoyed watching it.
Sure.
I did want to also mention the moment where Cage gets woke. This is after I think right after the scene with the Japanese uniform thing. He's like given a medal by his by one of his officers, and the guy's like, "Oh, you did this all by yourself. Good for you." And Cage like has a moment where he's like, "No, sir."
Right.
My code talker friend helped me. It's like, "Oh, what, that Indian over there? He's a Navajo."
I mean, it's like
it's on the nose. It's, you know,
it's super on the nose. Yeah.
But yeah, I did also want to mention Christian Slater's little bonding moment with Charlie was kind of nice.
Jam on their instruments.
Yeah, exactly. They played the flute and the harmonica together, and then they both die later on, and it's a little sad. And then Noah Emmerich's arc in this movie I wanted to talk about because I thought that was kind of funny, where it's just like he starts off as a racist. And then he ends by not being a racist, and that's like, and that's his arc in the movie. It's like
pretty bad.
I always think about like really simple character arcs. I always think about Philip Seymour Hoffman in Patch Adams, because his arc in that movie is I don't like you, Patch Adams, and then later on towards the end of the movie, he like smiles at something Patch Adams does, and that's the end of his arc.
Yep. That's it.
And that's kind of what I felt like with Noah Emmerich's character in this movie. He's like, oh, these Indian guys over here, they don't want to, they're jerks or whatever. And and then later on, like, you know.
They're not so bad.
Yeah, they're not so bad. Charlie saved his life, and he's like walking down the hall, like walking in the lines, like, you know, I always thought Indians were bad, but they're not. And
yeah. I think that's almost verbatim. It's pretty close. Yeah,
that would not surprise me at all. So, was there anything else you like wanted to talk about scene wise in this movie, Mike? I feel like there's not that much. There's not really nothing that notable about Wind Talkers is the thing.
No, but I did want to point out. I think having watched a lot of Mystery Science Theater recently, the new ones, they point out how often stock footage is used.
Yes,
and there's a moment where they call in artillery from the battleships off the island.
100%.
And we just smash cut to World War II stock footage. Like, really grainy stock footage of battleships firing.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I forgot about it. But yes.
Yeah. It's bizarre. It's so weird.
As soon as that happened, I quoted the Reptilicus review in my head. Which is like, well, no wonder they can't hit anything. They're in a different movie.
Yeah, it's very odd, especially because it's not just like we go to the battleships for a really quick just to see this, you know. I mean, that could be really interesting, right, to use actual – I mean, I don't know if it's actual World War II stock footage, but it looks like it might be.
Yeah.
But it's like we are jumping back and forth between shots of the soldiers and shots of the battleship, so it really stands out.
It does. It does.
An odd editing choice.
Yeah, that was odd. Also, the CGI planes at the end were a little odd too, right?
Yeah,
I mean that might have looked okay in 2002, but that effect does not hold up so much.
Not so much,
which is weird because it seemed like everything else, like most of the other stuff, was like done pretty practically. Like if you look at all the explosions and stuff, like I could see, like going back to Tropic Thunder, like I felt like it's actually really funny because the death scene that Cage has, as he's doing that, there's explosions and shit happening around him, and and that's how it is in the Tropic Thunder thing with Danny McBride, like with the. Explosions going like big ass titties. So that's what I was thinking of when the explosions are going on behind Nicolas Cage.
I wonder if that's what they're referencing.
Maybe. It might be. I think there might have been some influence there. Quite possible. But yeah, so like the CGI planes are a weird thing because everything else looks like it was mostly done practically.
Yeah, this is pretty much Squibs the movie. Everyone is just exploding in blood all the time.
Yeah, it's great. I think
pretty awesome.
If you cut this movie down to like an hour 45 minutes and made it just the action scenes, I think it would be a masterpiece, quite frankly. Because the thing is, a lot of the action scenes, like, you know, you get kind of involved with some of the character, like some of the character development happens through action, which is what John Woo is very good at, I think. And so, you know, like you can have the budding relationship between Cage and Beach, you know, kind of coexisting with their action scene. I think that's what makes the scene where Beach puts on the Japanese uniform so effective, is because, you know, that's a scene where you're seeing their relationship grow in real time as the action is happening.
Right.
You know?
Hot take. I like it.
I don't know if that's that hot a take.
I don't know if it's that hot a hot take. No.
It might just be a hot take to say the action is good in Wind Talkers. but anyway, yeah. So I don't really have any other scenes I want to talk about, Mike. If you did, then go for it.
No, let's see what our Netflix friends have to say.
All right, let's do that. Let's get into our Netflix reviews for Wind Talkers starting right now. Here's a 1-star review of Wind Talkers. And I should say, if you go to Netflix, their site, there are very few positive reviews of most of them are 1 or 2 stars, and in fact all the ones that I have here today are 1 or 2 stars. Here's a 1-star review of Wind Talkers. I suffered through 40 minutes of this slop. This is a very juvenile production. The acting is bad and the war scenes unrealistic. Of course, I should have known that anything with Christian Slater would be awful. Irrational hatred of Christian Slater right there. I mean, I feel that's actually something that I've heard from people, like, that they don't like Christian Slater.
Because he's too handsome, Mike.
I always thought it was the voice, the Christian Slater voice that he has going on.
Yeah.
I like Christian Slater quite a bit, and he's the star of two movies that I really love, Heathers and True Romance.
Right.
And also, he's a Slater on Archer, so there's that as well.
Just playing himself.
Playing himself. That's great. And he's on Mr. Robot now too. So he's there was a long period of time where Christian Slater was in nothing. Like,
yeah, he just wasn't. I think we've had a Slater sounds.
A Slater sounds. Exactly. That's going all with the McConaissance. We're in the middle of a Jeff Goldblumissance too. I don't know if you're aware.
Oh, man. It's going to be a wonderful future.
Yeah, so that's nice. Here's a 2-star review of Wind Talkers. Okay. I love Nicolas Cage. He is one of my favorite actors. The only problem that I have with him is that his movies are either really good or really bad. This one is not on the really good list. The plot was poor. The movie was supposed to be about the Code Talkers. It ended being more about a soldier dealing with some guilt feelings. There was a lot of action, bombs, but I still could not feel connected to the actors or even feel bad for them. I love war movies, but this one had too many war actions with a very weak plot. For those reasons, I give it 2 stars, which actually is a 1-star, but the 2nd star is for Cage being in the movie. Smiley face.
Aw, they turned around and got cute at the end.
Yeah, it's nice. here's a 1-star review of Wind Talkers. I wanted to like this movie, but it was a relatively unrealistic war film. It was supposed to be about the Navajo Wind Talkers. Every review is like, it was supposed to be about the Wind Talkers, right?
Yeah, it's called Wind Talkers.
Yeah. But that was just an excuse for a shoot-em-up movie. In this movie, our Marines can kill rows of Japanese soldiers without needing to even aim.
True. That's actually very true.
Very true. Our fighter bombers bomb enemy targets at an altitude where the Japanese could have taken it down with their samurai sword. Never mind that the exploding bombs would have taken a wing out of our fighters. Our tanks are attacked by enemy artillery, and we can't call in an airstrike because the Wind Talker lost his radio. I guess our tanks don't have radios or can't call in their own target? That's a fair point.
Sure.
Okay, they won't be coded communication, but I think you don't really need code when the enemy is looking at you and raining down artillery on your head.
I appreciate this tactical review. This is amazing.
This guy definitely just poked all the holes in the final act of this movie.
Yep.
Here's another 1-star review of Wind Talkers. I had seen this right after it was released and completely forgot I had watched it. When I started to watch it again, I remembered why I forgot it. The first 10 minutes is filled with upgraded John Wayne type of battle scenes, which makes zero sense. Yeah, it's a movie and it's supposed to be entertainment, but this movie isn't entertainment. It is punishment for something I did a long time ago, and I paid the penalty by watching this terrible movie twice.
That's wonderful.
I love that he forgot that he watched it. And like independently thought, hey, I should watch this movie called Wind Talkers. That seems pretty good. And then he started watching it, realized that he had seen it before, and then watched it again.
Yeah.
Here's a 1-star review of Wind Talkers, once again. Nothing much but flying body parts, spurting blood, lots of guns, bombs, and fire. 95% of the dialogue is, get down, stay behind me, oh God, I'm hit.
Oh, man. I thought this was going to be our cursing friend.
No. It's not, unfortunately. Very little about the actual Code Talkers of any relevant value. A great disappointment, to put it mildly. But then, it seems like some people just really like flying body parts and, oh God, I'm hit. And that's what makes this a great movie. and I gotta say, if this movie was actually 95% flying body parts and oh god, I'm hit, I'd be into it.
it'd just be a grindhouse movie. Exactly. And I'd kind of be down. Yeah,
I would kind of be into that. Anyway, here's the last one. A 1-star review, once again, of Wind Talkers. I have never written a review before, but let me say I was sorely disappointed when I began this movie, only to find that Nicolas Cage starred in it, so much so that I immediately exited the movie. If elected president, I swear to abolish all Nicolas Cage movies and furthermore banish him to a lone island where he will live out his days in solace.
Wow.
Man. That would be rough.
That took a dark turn.
Yeah. I'd hate to say he would be a preferable president to the one we have now, but...
but, like, it's not hard to do that.
That said, he would probably outlaw our podcast, too. And, like, where would the world be then, you know?
Yeah. Sorry, Colin. You'll have to find a new podcast.
All right, Mike. Do you have any other final thoughts about Wind Talkers before we wrap this up?
No, I think we said for everything for the most part. It's a pretty not that great movie. Yeah. Has some interesting action, I guess. Or action could possibly redeem it, but there's so much not action that it's not worth it.
Yeah, I would say watch the action scenes online because they're pretty cool.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, Wind Talkers, not so great. Pretty disappointing. So, you know, I'm a John Woo fan. I do enjoy the Woo. This was one of his lesser American movies, unfortunately. But yeah, thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike Tricrescio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, you can subscribe to our podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Help support this podcast and Phil Book taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. You can list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks for another episode of The Complete Works. Actually, join us next week for an episode of The Complete Works, in which we'll be talking about Nicolas Cage in a movie that I really, really love. And Mike, I don't think you've seen this, right?
I haven't seen the next movie.
Yeah, it's a Spike Jonze's 2002 film, Adaptation. Very good movie. Nicolas Cage is actually nominated for an Oscar for that movie.
Yeah. Mike, you were so excited about Adaptation, you forgot to say where people can find you online this week.
Did I?
You did.
Oh, man. Well, you can find me online. You can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com and, of course, crookedscoreboard.com. Mike, where can we find you online this week? I already
you
asked.
Can find... No, you didn't. You just did? Skipped straight to the end part. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. I am way off. The thought of doing Adaptation is just boggling my mind right now. Okay, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
I swear, if I discover when I play this back that this is a ruse for you to plug yourself twice, I'll be very upset.
Either I blacked out or we skipped it and I don't remember.
I guess
we'll now I'm nervous.
I guess we'll find out. I'm going to leave all of it in. So we'll find out, and the listeners will find out too, along with us. It'll be fun. Anyway, so yeah, next week we're doing Adaptation. Great movie. Very excited to talk about that. Plus, you can keep an eye on Film Bookcast. In 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Pretty excited about that one too. That just played for critics recently and got a pretty good response. So
yeah,
pretty psyched.
I just rewatched the first one and like, damn. That's so good. It's amazing.
It's a fun time. I got to rewatch that, too. It's been a little while. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening, and thanks for getting in the cage.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Boom. Nick Cage, motherfucker. Boom. Nick Cage, motherfucker. Boom. Nick Cage, motherfucker. Think about that while you're leaving Las Vegas. Boom.